Sarah.
Hi, I'm Matt.
I'm Rebecca.
And this is Playboy Revisited. As usual, we'll start out with a drink recipe. Today we have a drink recipe for sangrias. It's in the advisor section of Playboy. The person writing in does not know how to correctly spell sangria. And it seems like Playboy doesn't know how to correctly make a sangria either. The recipe that they give is to half fill a highball glass with crushed ice, 2 jiggers of claret, which is a type of wine, 2 jiggers of pineapple juice and a dash of lemon juice, add a teaspoon of bar syrup and fill her up with soda water for a mild and tasty thirst quencher. I tried making this. I'm drinking it right now. It's not that hot.
Wait, that's what we're drinking?
Yeah, that's what we're drinking.
It's pretty good. I think it's pretty good. It's very tropical. It's definitely not sangria in the slightest.
It's basically sangria spelled wrong.
It's a good way to put it.
Awesome. And today we're kind of going to be talking about Playboy and how it represents gender, specifically like the way that it represents women. Of course, we'll talk about that, but we'll also talk about how it represents this kind of like ideal image of masculinity. So as we know, Playboy started as a lifestyle magazine and it promoted Hugh Hefner's like perfect idealization of masculinity. And it could be argued that the Playboy lifestyle itself, the one that they represent in the magazine, is one that completely transformed life for men in the 20th century.
Which we all know about. I know personally about being a man in the 20th century.
Right.
Nobody better qualified.
You literally didn't even live in the 20th century.
Yeah.
What do you think life is like as a man in the 20th century? You got to experience some of it.
I experienced some of it, not necessarily as a man, I would say. I was a male in the
20th century. A tiny boy.
I had a good time. Played a lot of video games.
I don't think that's exactly Hugh Hefner's lifestyle.
No, yeah, not probably 1965.
Probably a little different from Hugh Hefner.
You mean in like 1999 when the world was ending, you didn't have 3 women dressed in bunny suits on your arm?
No, I was too worried about Y2K. I was in my bunker.
As we've said before, Playboy itself was, quote, a sort of Bible which defines a young man's values, shapes his personality, sets his goals, dictates his choices, and governs his decisions. And I think that, like, the large subset of stories and articles that we're going to touch on here are those that are representing that perfect hegemonic masculinity. It's, like, stories about fishing and hunting and racing cars and bedding beautiful women.
All of my favorite things.
Particularly the last one.
Do
you know what hegemonic means, Rebecca? I've just never heard that word so much. I guess I'm unlearned.
Unlearned.
I think our small liberal arts education means everything. The word hegemonic and the word tokenized are like second nature.
Like,
at this point.
It's used by a very small and specific slice of society.
You're gonna start hearing it everywhere now. But yes, no, Playboy definitely represents the hegemonic masculinity. And like most of the articles, honestly, a lot more articles are about what it is to be a perfect manly man. A lot more than they are about like
sexy
women
ladies.
Or sex. Yeah, it's kind of surprising. Like, not what I expected. But on the flip side, of course, of all of the hegemonic masculinity, we have like the way that they're representing women within this hyper-masculine context. So like many things, this world of Playboy is constructed by men for men, with a consideration of women's issues just as a peripheral thought, but a consideration of women's physical assets as a primary one. And I think that's true of 1965 than it is now, but we've not progressed nearly enough.
I would argue that for a period in time, I feel like we went backwards a little bit.
I think so. I mean, the Playboys in 1965, they, you know, they don't do a great job of like respecting women, but they don't totally objectify them in the same way that the ones from 1980 do.
Because in 1980, you could get away with a little more nudity, yeah. I would argue. Absolutely. A little more lewdness.
And a lot more bush.
Yeah. Which, I mean, isn't bad.
Wait, I'm curious about where we went backwards. It was temporarily, you said? Just for a period we went backwards?
I feel like once we got sort of past the time of sexual liberation, there was a little more ability for Playboy to be explicit, like further explicit than it was, and then I feel like we were like, maybe women are more than this, and let's dial that back a little bit.
Yeah, there was a period where like it was after this when they're like objectifying women a lot more, or being like, oh, women have the pill, they're sexually liberated, like, let's just have sex with a lot of them, prior to them like letting women write for the magazine. yeah, there is a little bit of that in here. So the first article I want to talk about today is called Far Out Safari, and it is a perfect depiction of like true hyper-masculinity. And it gets cited in academic articles like after 1965, saying that the act of safarying is kind of like a perfect example of manly activity because it is a full exertion of power over
just
your environment.
Just go to war. That's what I say.
You mean you don't want to kill innocent animals in Africa?
No. Kill innocent civilians instead. I'm just kidding. Don't do that.
War is bad. But I think
safari is a really nuanced idea.
How so?
Because, I mean, for one, obviously, these are wealthy white men going to underprivileged countries, right?
Mm-hmm.
And paying them to be like, let me kill these indigenous animals. Indigenous is probably not the right word. Native animals. And, I mean, I don't know. People are like, sometimes they're like, yeah, but they give the money to the people that live there.
Yeah, that is exactly what he's saying in this article. He's like, yeah, you know, we might exploit some of the areas of these countries, but
we might exploit them.
We're giving them some money.
But you could also give them the money without murdering
their animals.
Their endangered animals.
Do they talk about conservation at all? Like using the money for the conservation of the animals?
Well, I think at this time, a lot of the animals that are currently endangered weren't endangered then. Mm. I'm sure that this contributed.
Wasn't much of a talking point then.
They do talk a little bit about how you have to make sure that when you're picking a place to safari, you're picking a place that is well stocked, because they will do safaris in places where animals are more endangered. So you want to make sure you have a reputable source.
Those ones cost extra.
To wipe something out that costs a little extra.
Just take a selection from our extinction selection.
Yeah, I think it's just such a power trip to do something like that. Which, I mean, is pretty obvious to, like, murder something and then take a picture of you and its head.
Yeah.
You know, with a nice little...
And post it as your Facebook picture, because you're so cool.
I don't think they were posting to Facebook.
So it's like, that's valid. But yeah, I mean, it's so traditionally masculine, I guess, which I think sucks.
Part of the safari, too, is, like, well, part of what he talks about, this is basically kind of like it's a story of his safarying, because he went on, like, 70 safaris or something like that. And it's also kind of advice on if you're going to go do a safari. And part of it is, like, you know, make sure you have all the booze you need, all the guns you need, and make sure that you have all the women you need that can just
how many
be there
women
for you
do you need?
In your tent.
I think it also really harkens to, like, colonialism, the late 1800s,
kind of,
you know, English colonialism,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was also such a masculine thing, and to, like, you know, as an art history major, people would go and, you know, get paintings painted of them to go hang up in their houses and be like, yo, look at me, I did this cool thing. First of all, you can get that painted without going there and, you know,
actually
having sex with ladies who don't want to have sex with you.
Right.
I don't know. I don't think it's that cool. I'm not impressed.
You wouldn't want to go on a safari?
I'm super curious that they felt it necessary to call out bring women to a safari. I don't know. It just seems like a Playboy throw-in. Like, oh yeah, bring women to...
Well, they're like, you don't...
just another one of those objects that you need.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they specifically say, like, don't bring your wife on a safari if she nags too much, because she's just going to nag even more, like, in the outdoors. But if you have any other women...
In the outdoors. Women can't do outdoors.
It does say that they're like, yeah, the women will actually go on the expedition part of it, but, you know, you can keep them in your tent for fun.
I want to go on an expedition. I don't want to kill anything, necessarily.
That's part of the expedition. It's because you're a weak woman. You're weak-minded.
I mean no murder. That's why. But yeah, I mean, you could go on a safari and not kill anything and just have a fun little time. Take a picture with a live animal. That's better.
But then you don't get the power.
Okay, and you don't get the taxidermy rug to put in your mansion.
There you go.
I actually do kind of want one of those. So.
This man, the guy who wrote it, again, he went on a bunch of safaris. He's been in safaris in different countries. Specifically, he went on like 10 safaris in Africa. He talks about all of the animals that he's killed. He's killed 3 elephants just for the use of their tusks.
That's not nice.
More than 2 lions.
20 leopards.
Sorry, more than two?
He's like, I don't know, more than two.
Not three, but like a little more than two.
2.5.
Two and a baby.
No, I hope not.
One lion and then a pregnant lion.
Just kidding, sorry, that's dead.
She's got dark.
He's killed 20 leopards, 100 buffaloes, more than 1,000 zebra, gazelle, etc., and then more than 3 tigers, probably. Which I feel like you can't really do now.
Tigers aren't really African safari animals, right?
He also goes to different places in South Africa.
You shorted her brain.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have asked.
I should have done my research. But yeah, no, he's killed a bunch of animals. And like, again, it was something that you could do. You could just like go shoot an elephant.
If you want to go shoot a zebra, they have, you know, a lot of people in Texas raise zebras. Just go to their house and shoot them there.
What if we like didn't kill animals ethical. Just for the pictures?
Just for the rush
the gram.
Of adrenaline?
Texas has like more exotic animals in cages than anywhere like in the world. There's something crazy.
I feel like one of my problems I have with safari is like there's no real sport to it. Like, yeah, you're killing a wild animal.
You have to aim.
But you're like in a Jeep. You know, you're not running away from it as it tries to kill you and killing it in sort of a victorious whatever. There's no bravery to it.
So you just want to go hog hunting?
Sure.
You can do that in Texas.
Nah, I'd rather go to war. You know what I'm saying? That's bravery. You're sacrificing something, but you're not sacrificing something if you're paying $10,000 to go on safari mm-hmm. and just have a man drive you up to an elephant and you shoot it. That's lame, dog.
He does do an, like, okay job of having, like, some respect for the tradition of it. Again, like, it's...
What tradition?
The tradition of the safari for people who are native to the region.
Okay.
If it's totally exploitative. It's totally just, like, paying money to go kill these native animals. But there is something to... Especially in the area that he was in, I believe, Mozambique. And there's a lot of, like, ritual that comes with the hunt. You know, you pray with a medicine man before you... go on the excursion, and he talks about times where people didn't respect those traditions and then had either a very unfruitful or a very dangerous hunt.
That's kind of fun.
Yeah, I do kind of like that idea. But he gives some respect to that and some respect to the people who are leading the hunts.
I want to meet a medicine man. I feel like that'd be fun.
Also, the white hunters... is what it's called.
White people.
I think white hunters are people who, like, have gone, that lead safaris, live in Africa, but, like, yes,
they literally are white.
Generally, they are. They're the people who, like, do the negotiating with people coming from America to go hunt. And he said you have to be aware of them because they will steal the women that you unwittingly take to your tent.
Dude. Damn it, I'm so sick and tired of
people. According to Wikipedia, white hunter is a literary term used for professional big game hunters of European or North American backgrounds who plied their trade in Africa, especially during the first half of the 20th century.
You do have to watch out.
Colonization.
The activity continues in the dozen African countries which still permit big game hunting.
It feels like big game hunting was a lot more common back then. Like, the way that he writes this article is that just, like, anybody...
Yeah, there was no regulation on it. I mean, I think a lot of the taxidermy that we have, like, a lot of the big game taxidermy that people have is from the early 20th century.
When do you think that declined? He talks a little bit about, like, how even at the time, it's declining in a lot of areas of Africa.
Like, the late 60s?
Really?
I don't know. That could be wrong.
You didn't live through it. You weren't safari.
I wasn't alive then. I was not safaring in the late 60s. But I feel like in the 70s, you don't hear as much about that as a cultural phenomenon.
But you do see a decent amount of bearskin rugs still.
Yeah, but that might be more North American bears.
Did you know Abercrombie & Fitch existed in 1965?
What did they sell?
They have like a lot of the hunting gear that they're advertising here.
Do they sell guns? Can I get an Abercrombie & Fitch pistol?
Yeah.
It shoots bullets weird.
He gives a lot of recommendations on guns here, like what the best one to bring, etc. Again, he also gives recommendations on like the best booze to drink, specifically only manly booze, no vodka.
Does he give women recommendations? What kind of women to have?
Again,
besides not your wife.
Yeah, you don't want your wife.
You never want your wife.
No, not your wife. And you also probably don't even want like women from the area, he's saying, like, this is your opportunity.
To bring white women, to bring your secretary.
Yeah, your secretary.
From home.
Yeah.
That's good to know.
Somebody who's going to, quote unquote, help you on your safari.
Give you some technical support.
That is one way to put it.
Someone to help you clean your gun.
That's a good one.
So yeah, all of this is, it's super masculine, and like, they even like, of course, shout out Hemingway as a big fan of the safari, because
I'm a big fan of him.
I mean, who's more masculine than Hemingway? Speaking of Hemingway, this next article is called The Waters of... It's not an article, it's a piece of fiction. It's called The Waters of Stingray, and it is basically that one book with the marlin.
I never have read any Hemingway.
The one Hemingway book that's short.
The Old Man and the Sea.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, so it's basically the same story. Like, they're just fishing, and then there's a storm.
And then it's the fishing is an old hard. Man and the sea?
His name is Beanie.
That's a good name. That is an old man name right there.
The other guy's name is Ike, which is an old man name too. But this is 1965.
So they called young, cool people Ike. Like the president. Ex-president.
Yeah, this article is just another representation of masculinity. And like, of course, they're not fishing for food here. They're fishing for sport, for game, which is just another way to yield your power over the natural world, as you should as a man.
And is arguably the most boring sport. Because you just sit. You don't do anything. And then maybe once in a while you catch a fish and you're like, is my fish bigger than your fish?
Let me post this on my Facebook profile.
Yeah, but you might as well compare dick sizes, in my opinion.
I feel like that's more fun, honestly.
Yeah, you get a little thrill.
What do you think?
How would you know?
A little bravery.
I personally have never engaged in a...
In fishing.
In either. I have never engaged in either because I've gone fishing.
It's pretty fun. I mean, it's exciting because you sit there for so long and there's nothing. And then as soon as something does happen, it's like amazing.
It's so boring.
Again, I'd rather fish in Minecraft because then sometimes you get exciting things.
My goodness.
You nerd. All of the rest of the articles, especially the fiction and stuff, of course, they're all written from the male perspective. Like, there's no women who are writing here. There's no women who are like... having anything of any importance to say. So even like we talked about the centerfold, it's supposed to be written from her point of view. It's very much just like white dude like writing it for her. So all of it has that lens on it, which brings us to the way that lens shows women within these pages. I'll take us back to like my absolute favorite quote from this whole Playboy, which is, like sports cars, liquor, and hi-fi, girls are just another Playboy accessory. And that's really, I mean, that's it.
Says it all, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Really does. I think one thing to note about, especially the male gaze, if you will, of writing in the 60s is, like, specifically looking at, like, Betty Friedan's Feminine Mystique.
Wow, you're so smart.
I know,
smart.
I went to liberal arts school. Is that, like, everything that was written, even for women, was curated and edited by men. Like, you know, Better Homes and Gardens was written to the male idea of what a woman is. And even if it was written by women, it was...
edited by men?
Edited and, I don't know, bossed around by men.
Yeah.
So there is no literature at this time that is... specifically for women, by women, and acknowledging them as independent and unique humans.
Where's our playgirl when we need
it? Exactly.
I mean, yeah, in this case, like, that's one of the first things that I noticed when I opened this particular issue is, like, if you look through all of the writers and the contributors to the magazine, of course, they're, like, all men. There are a couple of women editors and women photographers, which I was surprised by, to be honest. But, yeah, like, all of the articles, all of the writing, of course, it's done by a dude and then supervised by Hugh Hefner, who, world's greatest feminist.
He was the man's man.
He defined what it was to be the man's man.
Well, I guess he was also a ladies' man. But not in a feminist way.
Yeah, Hugh Hefner is... he's...
He speaks for me. You know, I think women were created to be objects. I really feel like when I came out of the womb, I was just looking for a husband.
My purpose?
To serve and protect. I mean, do the dishes.
Yeah. So the way that women are portrayed here again is just very much like another accessory. I wouldn't say that they're objectified in this issue as much as they're objectified in like later issues of Playboy. I don't know if it coincides coincidentally or intentionally with when they started showing full nude pictures, but this is a little bit more like a little bit less objectifying than the later issues, like especially the way they talk about women or readers talk about women when they write in. Here they're like, oh, she's so beautiful. But in the 80s, they're like, wow, I just really want to put my bleep in her bleep and bleep.
But yeah, I think there was also more taboo about being outwardly misogynistic and objectifying of women.
Because then how are you going to get a woman to be in your kitchen?
Exactly. You got to just do it subliminally. You got to gaslight her a little bit. You know, feed her some sort of "you work for me now" type of stuff.
Is that what they say, like, when you get married?
Yeah, you work for me now.
Your pimp game is stronger, Becky.
Thank you. I've worked on it my whole life. But yeah, I think there is obviously still misogyny.
Really? That's Duh. Such a brave statement.
I know. You can quote me on that one. But it is a little more under the sheets, if you will.
I see what you Under did the covers. So a lot of them talking about women is not them talking about women like, yeah, I don't know, as people. Again, like in that Leisure article, they're not considering the woman's perspective when they're talking about going on safari. They're not considering whether or not the women want to stay in the tent with them. When they're talking about race issues at the time, they aren't talking about that from like a Black woman perspective. It's not always considering women, but they do spend a lot of time considering women.
They don't consider women as physical and emotional whole beings. It's a they
consider them as physical wholes.
As sexy bitches.
They do a lot of talking about women's bodies, a decent amount of showing women's bodies, not a lot about women's brains. But that's, I mean, to be honest, that's to be expected.
Especially for the next couple decades.
Yeah. Because we're so much better now.
Do you think there's any correlation with the trophies from hunting on the safari and the trophies of women?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's really, it's something that you can conquer. That's part of it, too, is like the power dynamic of that relationship. This woman that you are gonna put in your kitchen to make casseroles for you. She's your prize.
She's the one you own while you rock up a nice body count with the ladies at the office.
Right, your secretaries.
Yeah.
Because well, you the fire them when and you're that's, done with them.
Yeah, the typists, you know.
One article that I think does like the best job, if not the only job, of like talking about the way that we're looking at women is The Eye, which is the last part of a three-part series of Vladimir Nabokov's fiction. And I just want to read this quote from it because I love it. But it really reflects the general Playboy demeanor of, like, the self-obsession of man and what it is to be a man and masculinity, but also, like, the idolization and, like, accessorization of women and that, you know, they are just somebody who is there to complement your male existence.
And unfortunately, they do it well because they're hot.
Yeah.
All women are beautiful.
That's period.
That's me on the record saying that. I love when women
exist. Mm-hmm. You love looking at them?
I love when women.
Oh, yes. I see. This quote is that, "What difference did it make to me whether she was stupid or intelligent, or what her childhood had been like, or what books she read, or what she thought about the universe? I really knew nothing about her, blinded as I was by that burning loveliness which replaces everything else and justifies everything, and which, unlike a human soul, can in no way be appropriated, just as one cannot include among one's belongings the color of ragged sunset clouds above the black houses. Or a flower smell that one inhales endlessly with tense nostrils to the point of intoxication we cannot draw completely out of the Corolla." It kind of veers off in there. But the main thing is, like, what difference does it make to me what she's like? She's beautiful. I don't want to taint her beauty with any knowings of what's going on in her soul. That's it. I mean, that's it. Why would you need to, like, worry about what's in a woman's head if you can just look at these titties?
Look at them titties. Them tig old bitties.
I feel like it's not that simple, though. I feel like people just do that anytime when they think they're in love and stuff. They just talk about how beautiful someone is. It doesn't have to be so objectified.
Do you think people can be honest to themselves in the way that he's honest in writing this? Where, like, I do not care about what's going on in your brain. It does not matter to me.
I think that's just one way of interpreting it. He could just be madly in love, and he's just like, look, she's so perfect and beautiful. And
he literally says, what difference does it make whether she was stupid or intelligent? Exactly. I don't care what her childhood was like. But I think that's how a lot of people who are writing this and a lot of the ways that, like, this is being read, I think it falls along those lines. Like, we're not taking time to consider women's issues. We're taking time to consider women's bodies. And that's, you know, that's a product of what this magazine is. It's not great, but it is what it is. And at least Nabokov's being honest about what that looks like for his character. But yeah, so it really much just reflects the general theme of Playboy, which is women as beautiful. And
women is beautiful.
Women is beautiful.
I mean, I agree.
It does get a little bit better later on. Like, I was reading this 1972 issue the other day, and they had women contributors who are writing about women for women. But here it's very much, it's writing about men, by men, for men. And that just consumes the existence.
I mean, I get their reading demographic is not exactly women.
The surprising thing is, like, a lot of the people who write in, not a lot, like, not a majority, but there are a lot of women who have written into
this. I guess if your son is hiding these under his mattress,
or your husband.
Or your husband. I mean, hopefully not. But you might peruse. I peruse. But I guess you could also be grandma who's buying them for her son.
It's mostly not nakedness. I mean, they do have a lot of good fiction, this beautiful writing. They have reasons that you would want to read it as a woman, even if you're not attracted to women. But, like, I don't know. How could you not be attracted to these
women? To women?
They're so beautiful.
Do you think they put any consideration into putting it, making it appealing to women at all? Or they just strictly know this is for guys?
I mean, I think you're right that the target demographic is
for, I mean, it says sure, entertainment for men on the
front. Yeah, men. But I think part of Playboy being such a cultural pillar for men means that inherently it's for women too, because women are just living in a man's world. So it's not that they need to worry about how they're catering this magazine to women. Like you were saying earlier, all magazines were being produced, yeah, edited, and distributed by men.
I mean, yeah, it's essentially, there's not much that makes this different from
Better Homes and Gardens. Mm-hmm.
Except that is falsely advertised towards women when it's kind of the same view on women that this takes.
Yeah, the only difference is here they're advertising men's, yeah, clothing.
Men's clothing and cologne and guns and beer.
And smokes.
And darts.
Darts.
Which, I mean, arguably women also like all of those things.
Yeah, the first advertisement here is, it's a woman talking about how what kind of tobacco she likes her men to smoke. She says, after all, if a woman cannot believe what men tell her, what is left in life? Because all the men tell
I
her
always
tobacco
listen to
is
what
best.
Men tell me.
What else is left in life?
I know.
Heaven forbid you have an opinion of your own as a woman.
I'm like, what type of menstrual product should I use? Let me go ask men and see what they say. And I'll do that.
And they have created stuff that will poison the inside of your body.
Was smoking pretty even between men and women?
I think so. It's not like they stopped smoking when they were pregnant in 1965.
I think it was definitely perceived as a more masculine thing, though.
Well, the way that they're depicting it here, for
so
sure.
Like James Bond is a sexy smoker.
But what about Audrey Hepburn with her long cigarette?
And then like Virginia Slims and stuff. Then they start advertising it as like diet.
They do have specific, like, they advertise different brands of cigarettes to different demographics, for sure.
What would you smoke, do you think?
I think
I'd be a Marlboro man.
I really want to try Salems. They advertise them in Playboy a lot, like menthol cigarettes.
Or
I don't
like
know if
Lucky Strike. I feel like, yeah, I'd be a Lucky
that's,
Strike.
Those are badass.
That's a manly cigarette.
I'm manly.
Also, beautiful depiction of women. In the article, Oh Danny Boy, which is the article about this 9-year-old who, like, really wants to see a vagina and, like, a vulva. That's the whole article.
Ew.
They say vulva?
No. They say...
No article wrote coochie. Vulva in the 50s.
I know. But you can't see the vagina. The vagina's on the inside. But yeah, the article about the 9-year-old who really wanted to see a snatch. He really... this
much better.
This author does a very poor job depicting women. There's like 3 stereotypes. He has his mother, which is defined as nagging. His
classic wife's, am I right?
Right. He has his PE teacher, which is like basically this stereotyped depiction of like a lesbian woman who's harsh. And then the last woman character in the story is this old lady that he sits outside of her window and watches her get it on with her husband.
Creepy.
And she's the one who finally shows him the forbidden snatch.
An old lady?
She's not like old, but she's like older. Like she's a Mrs.
Well, I mean, in the 60s, you can be a Mrs. at 23.
Well, I don't know, but he...
In the 60s, I'd already be a Mrs.
He does a... He does a real poor job of depicting women. My 2 favorite quotes from this article, he calls the PE teacher a wormy old whore, which I will be using. Wormy. You wormy old whore.
Excuse you, Strasser.
And then he does refer to that woman as the old bitch. The one that he gets to see his snatch.
I hope one day someone calls me that.
So, yeah, it's not super... We're not progressing feminism very much in this issue.
No.
But we do a good job of depicting what masculinity should be, how we want our masculinity to look. Fishing and hunting, pictures. There's a pictorial essay about like racing and the latest fashions that you should wear to the racetrack. And of course, plenty more written about like what kind of man you should be, what kind of things you should buy, what kind of stuff you should be doing in your free time. And that's gender, folks. We did it.
I don't know. I think that all of the depictions of women really stem back to boomer comics. You know?
There are actually a lot of boomer comics here.
I mean, this is where boomer comics came from.
This is the original.
Just look at your grandma, your great aunt, your great uncle, you know, old people in your family. And they will be posting essentially this Playboy issue on their Facebook pages. Like, oh, my wife, oh, I hate her. She's real bothersome.
Wait, literally, okay, so in the jokes, they have, like, a jokes page of every Playboy, which I am not inclined to read because the jokes are just so bad.
Maybe you just don't get them, okay?
Yeah. Some of them I really don't
Maybe
understand.
Maybe you're just not funny enough.
Literally, like, the last joke on this page is, then there was the man who wanted to get something for his wife, but no one would start the bidding. Haha, our wives are ugly.
Let's sell the women we decided to marry and spend the rest of our lives with.
They are your property, so.
That's true.
So, yeah.
Actually, at the time, yeah, at the time, women weren't able to open their own bank account.
It's for their own good.
They weren't able to open their own bank account. They weren't able to own a house. They weren't able to...
own property.
I feel like they also, like, couldn't even get custody at the time.
Well, I mean, divorce wasn't really...
Unless the men didn't want the children, which most of the time they don't.
Yeah, who wants kids? You.
Right?
But yeah, I think there's a whole generation that grew up with this that really hasn't changed very much. Which is unfortunate. And stems all of the problems that we have today.
The gender stereotypes and the gender differences that are expressed in this issue, we'll see, like, again, how they change when you get into later Playboy issues. This one, it doesn't really try too hard to dive into, again, what it is to be a woman and have thoughts, because it doesn't really matter. All you have to do is be pretty.
Good thing I am.
So yeah, man, that's the patriarchy. We don't need to listen to women. I don't know why you're listening to this podcast, considering I'm hosting it and you can't look at me. So, what's the point?
Yeah, what's the point in listening to women if you can't see them tiggle bitties?
Right.
That's the whole point.
But nonetheless, thank you for listening. So if you have anything that you want to say about this issue, about Playboy in general, feel free to write into playboyrevisited@gmail.com. You can follow Playboy Revisited on Instagram. Haven't posted anything yet. We'll post something eventually, probably. I don't know. Follow me.
You should post a picture of you to get more followers, because obviously women pretty equal attention.
Right, but that would require me being
Stop.
Thanks for listening. Liar. Feel free to play the 1965 playlist. You can find it. It's called Playboy Revisited 0365, so like the month and the year. It's very jazzy. And that's March. See you next time on Playboy Revisited. Bye.